This is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 21st, 2025. We begin on the front page with local business, pop-up eatery to feed Farm Bureau. Chicken shop owner to open restaurant in IAA building by Olivia Jacobs. Aaron Francis, owner of Pop-Up Chicken Shop, is embarking on a new food venture. Francis's pop-up hospitality will operate an elevated corporate dining and catering service with the employees at the Illinois Farm Bureau and Country Financial Headquarters in Bloomington as its first customers. Essentially, what I do at Pop-Up, I'm bringing here no cafeteria style, just elevated, made-to-order corporate food, the restaurant owner told the Pantograph. He had started consulting work under the name Francis Managing last year, but decided to transition to pop-up hospitality instead. However, he plans to continue consulting for restaurants in the future. Francis said he approached the Illinois Farm Bureau with the idea of taking over its kitchen after Pop-Up Chicken Shop, which is at 409 North Hershey Road in Bloomington, completed a 300-sandwich catering order for its office. Since then, they've been working toward this partnership to feed Illinois Farm Bureau and Country Financial employees 5 days a week, he said. My team literally told me of this amazing facility that was sitting empty. And I was like, oh, really? That sounds cool. I knew a couple of people that worked here. Come to find out, the person that's in charge of building facilities for Illinois Farm Bureau is someone I've known for like 25 years, Francis said. So I started this new company, and the rest is history. The partnership became official this summer, he said. Illinois Farm Bureau is excited to partner with Pop-Up Hospitality to bring locally crafted food and beverage service to the IAA building, said IFB President Brian Duncan in a prepared statement on Monday. This partnership reflects our commitment to supporting and elevating Central Illinois businesses while creating welcoming, community-rooted experiences for employees. IFB's dining area previously operated cafeteria style, and the corporation would bring in different caterers each week. But the space has been vacant since the COVID-19 pandemic, Francis said. Pop-Up Hospitality's new restaurant, which is exclusive to IFB and Country Financial, is called the 1701 Cafe at Illinois Farm Bureau. Francis said Farm Bureau employees had the opportunity to vote on the name, which reflects the street address of the IFB campus. Although Francis isn't bringing the pop-up chicken shop menu to 1701 Cafe, he is planning to offer fried buffalo chicken sandwich. The menu will also include soups, salads, sandwiches, rice bowls, pizza, and breakfast items with a coffee shop and bakery on site as well. Francis said 1701 Cafe will operate from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Breakfast will be available from 8 to 10:30 a.m. Lunch will then be served until 2 p.m. and the coffee shop will be open all day. The pizza program is what I'm mostly excited for. We're going to be doing New York style, but then we'll also be doing tavern style and then grandma style, which is like pizza paella, but less thick. It's essentially called Sicilian style, Francis said. Just really good food. I personally think it's going to be the best overall menu in town. You're going to be able to get just a little bit of everything. The deli sandwiches at 1701 Cafe will include some of the specials featured at Pop-Up Chicken Shop that were like cult favorites, so they're going to be available every day here, Francis said. The 1701 Cafe at Illinois Farm Bureau is set to open on Monday, October 27th, and Francis said given the number of employees who work on the IFB campus, he expects to serve up to 500 people every weekday. That number will increase, too, he said, when the employees move from the old Country Financial building on General Electric Road to the Towanda Avenue campus next fall. That move will coincide with Illinois State University opening its College of Engineering on General Electric Road. Francis said he will be serving upwards of 1,600 people daily. I'm actually so excited about this endeavor, Francis said. Illinois Farm Bureau has really provided me with a lot, and I've built such a great relationship with them that we're simply here to keep their employees happy. Morale in a corporate building, especially a company like this. I mean, this is a very large corporation, and it's Illinois Farm Bureau and Country, so I mean, kudos to them for caring about their employees as much as they do. Once the 1701 Cafe officially takes off, Francis said he will be looking forward to potentially partnering with other area businesses too. For more information on pop-up hospitality, contact Francis at Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at popupchicken.co or follow the business on Instagram at popup.hospitality. Brennan Dennison writes, ISU teaching assistant arrested in Turning Point event disruption. Illinois State University authorities said a graduate teaching assistant was arrested Friday and then let go from his position after being accused of disturbing a registered student organization affiliated with Turning Point USA. In a Facebook post, the ISU Police Department said a campus group reported to police that two of their events where members' staff tables on campus were disrupted over the past week. The department did not identify the group, but Turning Point USA said on social media that its ISU affiliate was the organization. Police said the teaching assistant was charged with disorderly conduct and criminal damage to property in connection with both incidents. The case is pending, and additional charges and university discipline may follow, police said. In an emailed statement Monday, ISU said Lopez was relieved of his duties as a graduate teaching assistant as the investigation continues. Turning Point USA is a conservative youth organization with a presence on high school and college campuses across the country, including at ISU. Charlie Kirk, the group's founder, spoke at ISU on April 8th and was fatally shot September 10th at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah. In an X post, Frontline's TP USA cited the ISU police arrest statement and accused the man of flipping over the ISU group's table and tearing down their promotional flyers. On its website, Turning Point USA describes Frontline's as its media coverage network that exposes evil and presses truth. Quote, the Frontline's X account also shared a video of what they say is one of the incidents, which shows a man who is heard saying, quote, Jesus did it, so you know I have to do it, right? Close quote, before grabbing the table and knocking items off of it. ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff said on a social media post that the university is committed to protecting the First Amendment and safety of all in the campus community. We encourage all members of our community to learn more about free speech rights and responsibilities at Illinois State University, including constructive ways to respond when encountering speech that they may disagree with, Woodruff said. ISU police directed people to the Dean of Students Office webpage on free speech rights on campus, available online at deanofstudents.illinoisstate.edu/free-speech. From Downs, we have the coroner IDs crash victim. The McLean County Coroner's Office has identified a 71-year-old woman who died Saturday after a two-vehicle crash in Downs. Illinois State Police Troop 5 responded about 3:23 p.m. Saturday to a head-on collision on U.S. Route 150 near Cedar Avenue in Downs, according to a news release. ISP reported a vehicle was traveling eastbound on Route 150 when it collided with another vehicle traveling westbound. The driver of the westbound vehicle has been identified as Alice Folks of Downs. She was pronounced dead at the scene at 3:51 p.m., according to a news release from McLean County Coroner Kathleen Yoder. Preliminary autopsy opinion indicates Folks died from multiple blunt force injuries, Yoder said. Toxicology testing is still pending. The other driver fled the scene on foot, but troopers later found his person and took them into custody. This person was also taken to a local hospital with injuries, state police said. The crash remains under investigation by the McLean County Coroner's Office and the Illinois State Police. Next, we'll turn to a national story. Many will lose if ACA aid expires, by Allie Swenson and Kendria LaFleur with the AP. Celia Monreal worries every day about the cartilage loss in her husband's knees, not just because it's hard for her to see him in pain, but also because she knows soon their health care costs could skyrocket. Monreal, 47, and her husband, Jorge, 57, rely on the Affordable Care Act marketplace for health coverage. If their tax credits expire at the end of the year, their fully subsidized plan will increase in cost, putting it out of reach. Without insurance, they won't be able to afford his expected knee replacement surgeries, which will force him to take time off his job filling concrete and other issues like her chronic high blood pressure and his high cholesterol. On their already tight $45,000 joint annual income, budgeting for themselves and their five children will become that much harder. It worries me sometimes because if you're not healthy, then you're not here for your kids, Monreal said. It's a difficult decision because, okay, do I spend $500 on a doctor visit or do I go buy groceries? The enhanced premium tax credits that made coverage more affordable for low and middle income enrollees for the last 4 years will expire this year if Congress doesn't extend them. On average, that will more than double what subsidized enrollees currently pay for premiums next year, according to an analysis by healthcare research nonprofit KFF. The tax credits are at the heart of the federal government shutdown that is in its third week. Democrats demand the subsidies be extended in a funding deal, while Republicans say they'll only negotiate on the issue once the government is funded. With Congress deadlocked and the open enrollment period for ACA plans approaching on November 1st in most states, Americans like Monreal are left to navigate the unknown. More than 24 million people have ACA health insurance, including farmers, ranchers, small business owners, and other self-employed people who don't have other health insurance options through their work. The enhanced premium tax credits allow some lower-income enrollees to get health care with no premiums and higher earners to pay no more than 8.5% of their income. If the tax credits expire, annual out-of-pocket premiums are estimated to increase by 114%, an average of $1,016 next year, according to the KFF analysis. While some premium tax credits will remain, the level of support will decrease for most enrollees. Anyone earning more than 400% of the poverty level, or about $63,000 per year for a single person, won't be eligible for the remaining tax credits. Especially hard-hit groups will include a small number of higher earners who will have to pay a lot more without the extra subsidies, and a large number of lower earners who will have to pay a small amount more, said Cynthia Cox, a vice president and director of the ACA program at KFF. With higher premiums, some people will drop health insurance, Cox said. When many younger, healthier people inevitably forego coverage, insurance companies will increase costs for members of the covered population to account for them being older and sicker. The change also may strain hospitals, since more uninsured people will need emergency care they can't afford. That could lead to hospital closures or cost increases. If you have less subsidies for people getting health insurance, you're going to have less health coverage and less health care, said Jason Levitas, a senior fellow in the Health Policy Division at the Urban Institute. People are going to be sicker and die more. Health policy and analysts note that even if the subsidies are extended, insurance rate hikes for 2026 are already higher because insurers had to factor in their potential expiration when they set premium prices this year. There are also concerns the delay will cause chaos, confusion, and stress for Americans, some of whom already started receiving notices that their premiums will skyrocket next year. Chrissy Meehan, a hairstylist in Upper Chichester, Pennsylvania, has a neck condition that may require surgery. She says if ACA subsidies expire, she'll further delay the procedure. She voted for Republican Donald Trump for president last year, something she said she's almost embarrassed about now that the Republican-led government hasn't renewed the subsidies that help her afford her coverage through the state marketplace. Quote, I work hard and I'm trying to survive and do it the right way and pay my way, Meehan, 51, said, quote, I don't want free, I just want affordable for my income, close quote. Erin Jackson Hill has allergies, asthma, and hip pain she's managing with prescribed medications until she can get a hip replacement. The 56-year-old in Anchorage, Alaska, doesn't think she can pay for health insurance next year if the ACA subsidies aren't extended. The executive director of two nonprofits who also cares for her 89-year-old father full-time pays nearly $500 a month for her premiums. If the subsidies disappear, she plans to forego health insurance and pay for her asthma and allergy medications out of pocket. Jackson Hill said she worries about what will happen if her hip worsens and she can't make it up the stairs in her father's two-story home without treatment. I will have to go to the emergency room or I'll have to go bankrupt in order to pay for it, she said. Another ACA enrollee, Salt Lake City freelance filmmaker and adjunct professor Stan Clausen, said he'll find a way to pay for health insurance next year, even if it means he must buy cheaper groceries or get a new job that provides it. Clausen, 49, has lived with paralysis below his abdomen since falling while rock climbing when he was 20. He's active and generally healthy, but his spinal cord injury resulted in tendonitis in his shoulders and frequent urinary tract infections. He also has to buy catheters to use every time he urinates, a cost he said would add up to about $1,400 a month without insurance. I don't think a lot of people realize how expensive it is to have a disability, Clausen said, adding that trying to live without insurance, health insurance, would be, quote, financially devastating. On a somewhat lighter note, in gardening, we have For the Birds. As the growing season winds down, it's time to help feathered friends prep for the winter, by Jessica Damiano with the AP. I just cleaned out and filled a couple of bird feeders to help my migrating backyard buddies fuel up for their long journey south. And I'll keep it well stocked with high-energy seed mix throughout the winter to feed the non-migratory birds that tough it out until spring in my suburban New York garden. After all, it's now, when the garden is slowing down, that birds need us the most. Providing sustenance is one of several ways that we can support them. When selecting road food, sky food, for birds, I always seek out options that provide high-quality sources of fat and protein, like unsalted peanuts, black oil sunflower seeds, and suet, which are cakes made from animal fat, seeds, grains, and mealworms. I also whip up a batch of sugar water or nectar for migrating hummingbirds by dissolving 1 cup of white sugar in 4 cups of boiling water and then allowing it to cool. All this is to supplement the buffet of seeds and berries that my perennials, shrubs, and trees will naturally provide. I've long ago abandoned the idea of a tidy winter garden, instead leaving most of my perennials, many of them natives, standing until spring. The plump seeds hidden in their faded flower heads will also feed the non-migratory birds that rough it out here over the winter when other food sources are scarce. The asters, coneflowers, black-eyed Susans, goldenrods, and ornamental grasses will soon be dry and crispy, but they will continue to serve the garden and its inhabitants for months. So will the berries nestled between the spiky leaves of my American holly bush and those clinging to soon-to-be-bare viburnum and dogwood branches. With any luck, nuts will fall to the ground encased in their pine cone packages, though I suspect this may be an off year for my Norway spruce. If you aren't already in the habit, Consider leaving your spent perennials standing over the winter. Not only will they serve essential wildlife, but they'll serve you too. Bird song in winter is a treat in my garden, and the view of snow-covered seed heads from my window is certainly prettier than what my neighbor sees when gazing at her barren wasteland of a flattened, cleared-out garden. If you don't have seed or berry-producing plants in your landscape, you're in luck. Not only is early fall a great time to plant shrubs and perennials, but the plants are likely to be steeply discounted at the garden center. Consider adding trees, too. Oaks, firs, hickories, and evergreens are among those that provide quality food, shelter, and nesting sites for feathered friends. And that friendship will never be more apparent than in the spring when they repay you with free pest control services, feeding their baby hatchlings with thousands of insects that would otherwise go on to ravage your plants. Pushing fallen leaves into garden beds to insulate plants and nourish the soil will also shelter hibernating insects that in turn will sustain ground-feeding birds. It's much better for the ecosystem and easier for the gardener than bagging them up and sending them to a landfill. I'll also disconnect my solar-powered landscape lighting and keep the porch light turned off for the next couple of months to avoid disorienting migratory birds, which rely on the moon and stars as celestial navigation cues to find their way south. It's the closest they have to GPS, and I, for one, don't want to be responsible for interfering with that signal. In the end, caring for birds during the leanest months is a gift that will fly right back to you. Next, we have Study Back's Peanut Allergy Theory by Janelle Alicia with the AP. A decade after a landmark study proved that feeding peanut products to young babies could prevent development of life-threatening allergies, new research finds the change has made a big difference in the real world. About 60,000 children have avoided developing peanut allergies after guidance first issued in 2015 upended medical practice by recommending introducing the allergen to infants starting as early as 4 months. That's a remarkable thing, right? Said Dr. David Hill, an allergist and researcher at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and author of a study published Monday in the medical journal Pediatrics. Hill and colleagues analyzed electronic health records from dozens of pediatric practices to track diagnoses of food allergies in young children before, during, and after the guidelines were issued. I can actually come to you today and say there are less kids with food allergy today than there would have been if we hadn't implemented this public health effort, he added. The researchers found that peanut allergies in children ages 0 to 3 declined by more than 27% after guidance for high-risk kids was first issued in 2015 and by more than 40% after the recommendations were expanded in 2017. The effort hasn't yet reduced an overall increase in food allergies in the U.S. in recent years. About 8% of children are affected, including more than 2% with a peanut allergy. Peanut allergy is caused when the body's immune system mistakenly identifies proteins in peanuts as harmful and releases chemicals that trigger allergic symptoms, including hives, respiratory symptoms, and sometimes life-threatening anaphylaxis. For decades, doctors had recommended delaying feeding children peanuts and other foods likely to trigger allergies until age 3. But in 2015, Gideon Lack at King's College in London published the groundbreaking Learning Early About Peanut Allergy, or LEAP, trial. Lack and colleagues showed that introducing peanut products in infancy reduced the future risk of developing food allergies by more than 80%. Later analysis showed that the protection persisted in about 70% of kids into adolescence. The study immediately sparked new guidelines urging early introduction of peanuts but putting them into practice has been slow. Only about 29% of pediatricians and 65% of allergists reported following the expanded guidance issued in 2017. Confusion and uncertainty about the best way to introduce peanuts early in life has led to the lag, according to a commentary that accompanied the study. Early on, medical experts and parents alike questioned whether the practice could be adopted outside of tightly controlled clinical settings. The data for the analysis came from a subset of participating practice sites and may not represent the entire U.S. pediatric population, noted the commentary led by Dr. Ruchi Gupta, a child allergy expert at Northwestern University. However, the new research offers promising evidence that early allergen introduction is not only being adopted, but may be making a measurable impact, the authors concluded. Advocates for the 33 million people in the U.S. with food allergies welcome signs that early introduction of peanut products is catching on. This research reinforces what we already know and underscores a meaningful opportunity to reduce the incidence and prevalence of peanut allergy nationwide, said Sung Poblete, chief executive of the nonprofit group Food Allergy Research and Education, or FAIR. The new study emphasizes the current guidance, updated in 2021, which calls for introducing peanuts and other major food allergens between 4 and 6 months without prior screening or testing, Hill said. Parents should consult their pediatricians about any questions. It doesn't have to be a lot of the food, but little tastes of peanut butter, milk-based yogurt, soy-based yogurts, and tree butters, he said. These are really good ways to allow the immune system exposure to these allergenic foods in a safe way. Tiffany Leone, 36, a Maryland registered dietitian and director at FAIR, introduced peanuts and other allergens early to her own son, James 4, and Cameron 2. At first, Leone's own mother was shocked at the advice to feed babies such foods before the age of 3, she said. But Leone explained how the science had changed. As a dietitian, I practice evidence-based recommendations, she said. So when someone told me, this is how it's done now, these are the new guidelines, I just thought, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. And the flick fact today is true or false. Is it illegal to buy a bottle of water at a Bloomington bar or pub and then attempt to walk out of the place with it? And the answer says, although it's seldom enforced, that is legally correct. It is by ordinance against the law to carry a liquid drink out of a place that dispenses alcohol. And with that, we conclude the reading of part one of the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 21st, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part two.